it, this is the first federal case involving the homeless that you've, in the sense that the homeless are activists and advocates are often the target of city council's exclusionary efforts. Is this a significantly different case? Has this been taken, has this been done before by any other jurisdiction that you know of, or any sense of that?
Yeah, there've been a few cases. We've uncovered a case in Boston where there was a very similar situation. Somebody was trying to photograph a public meeting or to videotape a public meeting, and he got charged with disrupting the meeting.
Well, he had disruptive videotape
because they wanted him to put his camera in a way that basically he couldn't get any shots, and he just ignored it, and they called the cops on him. And
that sounds like our own city council with the video journalist Becky Johnson, who has been barred from filming from behind the dais where she used to stand for the previous 4 years.
Right.
Is that going to be a part of this lawsuit?
It isn't as of now, but you know, if she wants to approach me about doing something like that, I certainly would consider it.
And what are you putting out a call for, as I have been, for folks who have been harassed by the council, silenced, or have seen this happen, to kind of come forward and give declarations?
Not just anybody who's been silenced, but anyone who feels that they are afraid to get up and say what they need to say. Because of what's happened to other people, so yeah, it's even wider than just those who have been arrested and dragged out for, you know, criticizing them, but anyone whose speech has been, as they say in legal jargon, has been chilled as a result of, you know, observing their behavior with other people.
Yeah, not just, I guess, speech, but also your right to assemble, your right to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Absolutely.
Seems to be, you know, in question if you can be barred from a meeting for non-disruptive silent gestures, or trying to get your time at the mic when it is appropriately your time, or using a word like Führer or flunky.
You know, like I said, this is symbolic of a bigger issue. You know, it's just the whole process is shut down if we aren't allowed to speak, and it's a huge issue.
You know, perhaps we should ask the DA, since the only the legitimate charge that they have under any of these circumstances, if an individual actually disrupts the meeting, there's a Penal Code Section 403 of the State Penal Code about disrupting a meeting, which I was charged with, but then the charges were dropped on March 29th, or never filed. Maybe we should encourage the DA to file charges against the City Council for disrupting these public meetings. What do you think?
Well, it's clear in my mind that the only person who interrupted the meeting on March 12th was Tim Fitzmaurice. The meeting was moving along. Christopher Crone was going ahead with business until we had his little childish outburst of... Point of order.
Now, can a member from the citizenry make a point of order, or is that only the prerogative of the royal personages on the dais?
You know, that's a parliamentary issue.
And it's interesting because, you know, I think that we're going to need to know what the rules of order are, because I think they're used what they call a modified Roberts Rules of Order. Unfortunately, they're not this Roberts Rules of Order. They're somebody else's Rules of Order. And I'd be curious to see that text. I've never seen it. Maybe we can get a copy of that from the City Council's clerk. We're also in a time when there's a great... Looking at my mic levels, I'm wondering how we're doing. Going out over the air just a second. Yeah, we're okay. There is a war going on, and in the sense that the U.S. is, you know, actively threatening to invade Iraq, as troops in Afghanistan, as all kinds of prisoners at secret bases here, there, and everywhere, and has immense new powers under the so-called Patriot Act. Do you see any kind of response in Santa Cruz that encourages you with respect to this, and does it have any legal ramifications?
Well, I don't see enough of a response from Santa Cruz. I gotta say I'm a little disappointed that there hasn't been. I mean, it seems to me that I see more flags on more SUVs in Santa Cruz County than I do even when I go over to Santa Clara County to court. You know, I've been shocked at the. At the inaction, we're headed for World War III here. I mean, especially in view of what's going on in the Middle East right now, in terms of the occupation of the Palestinian territories, and so we've had a half-hearted response from the president at this point, basically just because he was put under so much pressure to respond to what's going on. But
well, wait a minute. Colin Powell will be there next week to chat with everybody.
Yeah. And he's already laid the groundwork for the fact that nothing's going to happen because he says, well, obviously this is something that can't be resolved in any short period of time. And of course, Sharon is just ignored anything that the president's had to say.
Well, locally in Santa Cruz, if you look at today's Sunday Sentinel, which I don't usually buy because it's too expensive, $1.50 for $1.50's worth of nothing, you see that coming up on the council agenda is the Peace Park on Tuesday, the Doug Rand Memorial Peace Park at the city's town clock. I'm of a mixed mind about this whole thing. The problem I have with the Peace Park is there's lots of talk about the Peace Park, but no talk about peace action in Santa Cruz, to demand the city council take a position against the bombing and against the further militarization of the situation. Instead, we're engaging in these little local token efforts of, nothing wrong with remembering Doug Rand and the good work he did. That's fine. What's your thought about that?
Well, clearly, like I said, we're not doing enough, and it's not that I guess I totally agree with you that there's just a general apathy about what's really happening here, and it's very frustrating, and a lot of it comes from the lack of media coverage. I know that there are a lot of people, in fact, if you read the letters to the editor, that they're soundly against what's happening. But the editorials and the stated positions of the management of the newspaper, which I noticed, by the way, that I just wrote my check to them, and I send off to Massachusetts or somewhere, I don't know, whoever now owns
Gannett Company or something.
Yeah, but this is even a larger issue, and it's one that I think, I have a theory that it basically dates back to Watergate and the taking over of the media by the right wing.
Well, that's intensified in the last few years, but in Santa Cruz, we had the same monopoly press in 1990, and we had freeways blocked and thousands of people out on the streets protesting the Iraqi war, or the Kuwaiti-Iraqi war, and the U.S. bombing of Iraq. And I think we had masses of people during the Rodney King Simi Valley decision,
right,
again blocking the freeways and coming out by the hundreds, if not the thousands. And what have we got now? We have, every Friday between 5 and 6:30, a few brave souls put up signs on Ocean Street. And, you don't hear any mention of it anywhere, although, everyone talks about a peace park. Where are the Ruth Hunters out there at City Council demanding the resolutions? Where's the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, or the Peace and Freedom Party, or the Green Party, or all these groups that were, they're trying to shame our City Council into doing something? They are all silent, except, you get good letters in the paper, but you get no action from the city government and very little direct action on the streets. Am I just being cranky here?
No, I don't think you're being cranky, and I, you know, I guess the thing that really gripes me more than anything, is not what the government's doing, but what we're letting them do, and you know, clearly they couldn't do this if we weren't letting them do it. So I think it's a function of the fact that the increased number of people who are on the government payroll, number one, are directly beholding to the government for the paycheck every month, and you combine that with the number of people who are who count on their paycheck from the large multinational corporations.
But in Santa Cruz, why such a change in Santa Cruz? I guess I don't understand that. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's that much different than 10 years ago. Is it just everybody's working double jobs, everyone's demoralized, people are worried because they're afraid that, you know, they're feeling solidarity with the war, I call them the warmongers after September 11th?
Right, yeah, well, you know, September 11th has obviously something to do with it, you know, that brought out this kind of jingoistic, you know,
bomb the shit out of them, man.
Patriotism.
Get the towel heads.
Yeah, that's one issue. But I also think that you know, the fact that Santa Cruz has become the most expensive place to live in the probably. Certainly in the United States, we know.
No, wait a minute. We've dropped back to third most expensive, according to... That was at yesterday's paper.
Yeah, and so the people that are attracted to live here now are in a socioeconomic status that they're part of the problem and not part of the solution.
We're talking with attorney Kate Wells, who's one of the two attorneys covering the Norse v. City Council lawsuit, which is coming up, by the way, at noon on the closed agenda of City Council, and I intend to be at City Council to make a statement essentially saying, while this lawsuit is being discussed, and I wanted to get your legal advice here, although who knows, I don't want to waive confidentiality, so maybe I'll ask for your illegal advice, which is, if I am to offer to City Council a proposal that says you need to make the following changes in City Council in terms of opening up the process, does this compromise my lawsuit?
Well, the parties can always talk. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's no prohibition against the parties talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if, you know, if I feel like there's anything to be gained by that kind of dialogue, I would highly encourage it. You know, in this case, I'm pretty sure it's
useless.
Futile. Mm-hmm. And in which case, you know, if you want to do it, fine. But I don't see that it could have any harm mm-hmm. to the case. But I, you know, more power to you if you feel like you wanna take that route.
Sure. I've already talked to Krohn on several occasions. I presented him with a letter twice requesting a specific series of reforms, and not particularly radical reforms, that would allow people really to regain the ground they've lost in the last few years in the public process of City Council, and plus have him fulfill a few campaign commitments that, in my mind, that I think he agreed were part of the understanding that we had when he was running for City Council office.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that I would like to change is, and I think everybody who wants to speak at a City Council meeting should speak, and, you know, I've sat in... I've had board meetings where it went on to midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. But you know, this cutting speakers off altogether is really outrageous. I mean, certainly they have the right to limit the amount of time that each speaker can use, but to just outright say, well, there's only going to be a half hour, and only all those of you who get in line in time to be at the front are going to be able to speak is really outrageous. So that's one thing that I think needs to be changed. I think everyone who wants to speak has a right to speak and should be given the opportunity.
I believe that is the case, at least with oral communications at the Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
Not that this is going to guarantee us any kind of real Democratic input into the process, we'll be able to talk ourselves silly and then get to go home and see nothing done.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, it's a beginning, restore certain constitutional protections. We've been talking with Kate Wells, a Santa Cruz attorney, well, attorney for a number of people who aren't even in Santa Cruz, but who look to her for help, as we did and do, as I do. Kate, thank you. Anything we can do, large donations to help with
large
that mortgage?
Donations, large donations to help me out with these cases. I'll tell you, it's, you know, I take these cases on a contingency basis, and you know, I have probably, you know, 40, 50 cases going right now, and no prospects of any settlement on any of these cases, so it's tough, you know.
Is there an address people can send their pennies, checks, and $1,000 bills to?
Have them send it to you.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you, Kate.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate you being on the air.
Okay, bye.
And the address to send the money, you should write those checks out to Kate Wells, W-E-L-L-S. She's an attorney at law. Our care of Robert Norse, 309 Cedar, PMB 14B, Santa Cruz, California. Again, Robert Norse, 309 Cedar, PMB 14B, Santa Cruz, 95060. And if you forget that, just give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 4833, and you can get that information. Probably want to wait a day. I haven't put the address on the line, but I will, because I do think Kate needs some of these donations. She's putting in time on this. And also, again, if you had a problem at City Council, just feeling afraid to speak, if you feel intimidated by what's going on or what you've seen on the television, we need your support. We need your testimony on this. So I give a call to 423-HUFF. Love to have your information there, and you'll help actually make the City Council responsive to the Democratic needs again, insofar as at least there'll be some kind of input restored to City Council. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. It's 15 to 1 thereabouts. We are on daylight savings time. Don't forget that. And we're going to run through a couple more things here very quickly. Tomorrow is the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board. That's the review board, a monthly meeting by the token fig leaf group that masquerades as a review body. I still can encourage people to file complaints with this board because it creates a record that is useful. However, don't waste a lot of time with it. However, there is a new member of the board. I've mentioned Mark Halfmoon, who really apparently wants to make some real reforms. He came to the latest Huff meeting. He's urged people to come to the meeting tomorrow. Citizens Police Review Board meets tomorrow at 5:30. And I also understand Green Party and Huff activist Thomas Levitt, who is throwing the Right to Sleep Summit at his house May 3rd and 4th, will be at the Citizens Police Review Board meeting complaining about behavior by Officer Brandt. Officer Brandt was an officer in charge of the City Council chambers at the last council meeting on March 26th, when Brandt apparently allowed the doors to be locked during the speech of Representative Farr, excluding members of the public from coming in violation of, you got it, the Brown Act, the Public Meetings Act that allows the public access to meetings. Actually, my being excluded for making a Heil Krone salute the previous meeting was also a violation of the Brown Act, in that it was a content-based suppression of a person's right to be at a meeting, not based on any real violation of the law. But anyway, Citizens Police Review Board does meet, and Levitt will be speaking during the oral communications period tomorrow at 5:30 at City Hall, City Council Chambers, 809 Center Street. Other action on the agenda, there's going to be apparently some after-analysis of what happened at their last meeting at the Beach Flats for the first time in history, or maybe the second. They had a meeting at the Beach Flats as part of their outreach. Oh, we are really concerned with reviewing the police. All you Latinos, come and check it out. We're going to look into racial and economic profiling, blah, blah, blah. Well, to me, it's still blah, blah, blah until there's some real action taken, let's say, to hold a real public hearing on a specific complaint, which this board has had the power to do for 7 years but has refused to do. And if Mark will start pushing for those public hearings and we'll actually see some public hearings, that will get people into the room. Also on the agenda tomorrow is a possible adoption of the new complaint form. Isn't that spiffy? Then there's also discussion of the auditor model of police oversight. of the presentation given by the San Jose auditor, who's even worse than the Citizens Police Review Board in Santa Cruz. They're going to look at that and consider making their body even worse by considering the auditor model. And I'm speaking kind of off the cuff. I haven't heard what she said lately. Maybe the auditor model has gotten better, but it's even less representative than the Citizens Police Review Board of Santa Cruz, which theoretically, and in this case practically, allows for some changes with people like Mark Halfmoon. Individual reports, discussion and action on special topics such as racial profiling, social economic profiling, use of force and arrest procedures, and domestic violence. Now, if you want to talk on these subjects, you will be allowed to talk on them during the body of the meeting. If you can sit through the rest of this stuff, that's on the agenda. Then there's also something about should the police officers be forced to give business cards. Chief Belcher says no. And part of this problem stems from the inept way the board put it. Instead of saying the police department should be forced to give cards, it should rather be said the police department should be required to offer a card if the citizen wants one. As he should always offer one, they don't have to take it. Pretty simple. And that's all happening tomorrow at 5:30. Chair Jim, don't bother me with the sleeping ban, King, who sabotaged that issue very well when he was on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, is now head of the Citizens Police Review Board. And, of course, this is a board that I've given my opinion on a number of times, but as I said, there's a new member of the board who's trying to make changes, and I'm putting out his concerns. He's also welcome to call in, as are any of you. 427-3772 is our call-in number. That, of course, that's at 5:30. Then at 7, you might want to whip over to Carl Wilson's house at 137 Felker Street, where the Homeless Issues Working Group of the Green Party is having its first meeting in many, many months. They were having some activist meetings last fall around Camp Paradise, but I don't know if they're willing to take on the hard issue of ending the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, which really is what needs to be done. Maybe bringing in some of those green heavies from out of town, or dumping some of those green featherweights like Fitzmaurice, who is a, you know, much prized Green Party member because he was elected, you see. He was elected. Therefore, anything Tim says goes, or we don't want to bother with any kind of embarrassing poor Tim, because someday down the line, he might help us pass a resolution. Anyway, that's tomorrow at 7 o'clock. At 137 Felker Street, the Homeless Issues Working Group of the Green Party. Everyone is invited. Things are happening in Las Vegas, too. Interesting editorial from the Las Vegas Sun. Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman has been on the wrong side of the homeless issue for the 3 years he has been mayor, according to the Las Vegas Sun. Regrettably, he seems unable to understand the misery his callousness has caused among homeless people, or the despair his policies have caused among citizens who expect their city government to fulfill all of its responsibilities. Oh, Sentinel, if only you could talk about Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice this way. If Goodman would only view homelessness with the same passion that he views such issues as economic development, we would have a city progressing on all fronts. Instead, at a time when homelessness is growing, we have a city with no plan, and worse, a mayor who disparages the men and women out on the streets. He has left no doubt as to his true feelings, which are that the homeless should get out of Dodge. If cities were judged solely by how well they treated the least fortunate among us, Las Vegas would be labeled a disgrace. Even when Goodman offers a glimmer of hope, such as Wednesday, when he finally suggested the city consider hiring a homeless coordinator, the hope is diminished by his unrelenting objective of depriving homeless people of even the slightest of city accommodations. His March 25th action of driving homeless people from their encampment at Four Master Lane and Main Street, and we're trying to get people to come to our homeless summit, May 3rd and 4th, the Right to Sleep Summit from that encampment, we may be able to do that, ostensibly was motivated out of concern for public health. When they regrouped at A Street and Owens Avenue, the MGM Mirage began providing garbage bags and cleaning supplies, and brother David Boer, who has been assisting homeless people for years, rented a portable restroom. Now Goodman is ordering that the restroom be removed on the grounds that it impedes pedestrians. That might be a valid reason, except there are no pedestrians there. If Goodman wants to counteract the goodwill of those trying to help, then the city should build its own public restrooms. They're found all over Europe and Asia, but not in Santa Cruz. We don't have 24-hour restrooms in Santa Cruz. Two of the five porta-potties have been taken out, and according to Matt Farrell, Fuhrer is a little strong, let's say powerful staff member of the Public Works Department, there's no intention of returning those porta-potties. So instead of bathrooms, as Crone promised us back in 1999, we have three porta-potties, one of them behind the Logos, one of them in the alley near 99 Bottles of Beer, and one of them out by the parking structure near Hobie's. That's what it is. So, but getting back to this Las Vegas story, again, basic elementary concerns like the right to sleep, the right to take a dump in privacy and not be arrested for it. Bathrooms are found all over Europe and Asia, and in most larger tourist-oriented American cities, such as New York City and Washington, D.C. In fact, public restrooms might be just one of the first things a homeless coordinator would suggest after spending even a short time studying programs in other cities. The coordinator's first task, however, for any suggestion to have a chance, would be to persuade the city to replace its obstinacy with a new spirit of cooperation. That would be nice if our city opened up the bathrooms at some of the public structures, City Hall, some of the parking garages, but no. They aren't going to do that because, you see, they might be vandalized, or they might be used for prostitution or drugs. So in the meantime, people can just take a dump and take a piss wherever they have to, or use, and I'm glad that they're there, the three now overworked porta-potties. Anyway, again, encourage people, if they're interested in the Right to Sleep Summit, give a call to 423-HUFF. It's going to be held at 1135 North Brantsoforte Avenue, May 3rd and 4th, at the home of Thomas Levitt. And if you want to comment on any of this stuff, our phone number here in the studio is 427-3772. City Council has an agenda on April 9th, which I've kind of looked over and I want to make some comments on. As I mentioned to Attorney Kate Wells earlier, I will be speaking at the closed litigation session, unless they try to shut me up, in which case we may have another lawsuit, who knows. That's at 12 o'clock, and it's not in the council chambers, but in the council support room. I believe that is a special room. I've never been to it. In the offices of the City Council, which is on the right as you head for the City Council chambers. It's across from the library, and it's in what used to be the old police station. What do we got? Well, we have that 12 o'clock session, which, as I said, will generally be closed. They're considering some claims by members of the public, but as before, in spite of my request when I made this request at the last council meeting, that the names of the police officers who are accused of misconduct in these claims against the city be included on the agenda along with the names of the persons seeking the compensation. I mean, if they're going to publicize the names of the people seeking the compensation, then they should also publicize the people that are being complained about. It seems to me only fair. And, of course, fairness doesn't seem to be on the agenda at the City Council. Again, the cops' names are not revealed. They mention, if you look at the agenda, that they'll give an oral report. The city attorney will speak about what happened in closed session later on in the council meeting. What it doesn't say is that'll be at the very, 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 very end of the council meeting. So in order to hear what the city attorney has to say, you have to really wait till the last trumpet to get there. And who's going to do that? Well, if you've got a television at home and channel 25, over which these are broadcast according to the agenda, then you will, but otherwise you won't. And again, it seems a deliberate attempt not to provide information to the community that, for example, might even be discussed during the council meeting at oral communications by the public. They could have this as the first agenda item, have the city attorney report briefly — it's usually a very brief report — on what happened at the closed session. Usually nothing happens, so that would be, you know, pretty brief. But it's an example of the failure of the council to have any respect at all for including the public in its process. There's still no word, by the way, from Martine Bernal on Mayor Crone's emails regarding war and peace issues and homeless issues. The mayor is required to make his emails public insofar as they concern these issues. I have been able to get the emails on the issue of his arresting me at City Council and the decorum rules back on March 12th. However, he has so far not coughed up the war and peace issues, the homeless issues, and they are over the 10-day deadline. They have 10 days in which to provide these documents. They're over the deadline. Maybe time to dial an attorney on this one, too. I mean, they have a responsibility to the public to make the records public. I hope they do. Going into the afternoon session, which starts at 3 o'clock, there are a number of items on the so-called consent agenda, and as you may remember, and I've talked about on the air, City Council Mayor Chris Crone has made it apparently it's a new part of the Muzzle North movement, or could be, I'm the person that's been applied to, and it's only been applied to me at the moment, to require me to, usually when you pull items off the consent agenda, you get to speak on them. One, you know, items 4, 8, 12, 43 are pulled off the agenda, and then they're called in order, and everybody, including the council, speaks on those items and votes on those items. Not in my case. All the items were pulled that I have pulled off, and usually that's anywhere between 2 to 7 items I pull off the agenda, are all rammed together in one bunch, and I'm given a set amount of time, which usually could be anywhere from 45 seconds to 2 minutes apiece that I have to speak on them. Again, differential treatment that I've remarked on before, and one that's designed to discourage others from talking about any of these consent agenda items if they're going to be treated in such a fashion. However, I may pull off some of them, and I'm going to tell you which ones I think require some particular interest. Let's take a peek here. Item 10 talks about a fee increase for the De La Vega Municipal Golf Course, a resolution establishing a schedule for green fees at the De La Vega Golf Course. It's a self-supporting enterprise fund. It's supposedly its maintenance, operating, capital costs have increased, and so they want to increase the funds, the amount it costs to use this. What does it bother us? It brings the city money. It's for, you know, if the rich want to golf and pay off the city fund, what's the problem? Well, the city is going to get $116,000 in revenue from this. I'm just wondering about the dimensions of the money that we're getting. What other city enterprises are run in this fashion that allow this kind of funding to happen? And frankly, golf courses have a lot of open space, and, you know, a campground up there in that area is something that seems to me, when you're talking about the survival and health and safety of homeless people versus sport for the rich, there's a real issue there. So that may be something I may be discussing, if I'm allowed to do so. Maybe discussing it anyway and dragged off and then talk about it later in federal court. Who knows? There's also item 11, city co-sponsorship, commercial use of Mission Plaza Park, waiver of fees and payment of dumpster fees for Peace Day Fair. And what this means essentially is a waiver of $834.78 worth of fees for facility use, sound permit, inspection, dumpster. And that's fine. I've got no problem. Peace Day, I'm all for that, though. Be nice to see some real peace action here that would actually have some impact instead of these token gestures. But my question is this. Why is it, for example, that, well, for example, we're having this event on May 3rd and 4th, the Right to Sleep Summit. Folks are coming from out of town. It'd be nice to put them up in a park somewhere for the night. Our fees should be waived, too, for that. It's a one-day event. I think it has some significance for homeless people across the state, gives some prestige to Santa Cruz, and assists the Santa Cruz homeless community. So I'm going to make a request to Jim Lang of Parks and Rec that he provide such a permit for us, and I'd like to see how much he's charged the AIDS walk and the dog shows that have gotten the annual permits in the past. So that may be coming up, too. And there's another item, 16, sole source purchase of Brackney Slides Bypass 12-inch portable pipeline and trailer-mounted reel system. Whoa. Well, that's fine. I know nothing about all that. All I know is that they're giving $143,000 for it. And that's quite a chunk of change, and I'd like them to be more specific about what that's all about and kind of give us some details. Last time when I requested this was the only item. When I requested some details on why they were spending $100,000 or so on a consultant survey of, I think, a water quality improvement, Crone asked the staff to stand up involved, and the staff stood up and gave a gobbledygook answer that meant absolutely nothing to me, and I don't think anybody else in the audience, and Crone was silent. I was just looking for some plain, common sense, easily understandable English that tells us why it costs money in the $100,000 range, either to get a study or to buy these kinds of pipes. I mean, how many pipes are involved? How much does it cover? What are the kinds of bids that have been considered? I mean, these are sort of reasonable considerations. They don't take hours and hours to discuss. They can be considered pretty briefly if you want to let in the sunlight. Seems like on occasions they don't want to let in the sunlight. Also coming up after the consent agenda in the afternoon is the housing element update. Or I should say it was coming up before it was removed from the council agenda until after the budget process this summer. That's the motion. Why are they postponing this housing element update? mean, housing is a very important aspect of the whole homelessness situation. I'd like to know more about that. It's because the city manager, that city manager for life, Dick Wilson, is recommending it. One of our most highly paid, if not our most highly paid, city official. He looks sleek in his silk suits, but the question I have is, why are we abandoning the housing element, a discussion on his say-so? So I'm going to probably ask to speak about that. Also coming up are two ordinances for first and second reading. One of them is a kind of a thing about a minor change in the law that allows the appointment of board members and commissioners under, in terms of the amount of time they can be appointed for, and the other has to do with campaign expenditures. Well, my point here in looking at these two ordinance proposals is City Clerk Leslie Cook, or whoever prepares this agenda, does not tell us that not only do you have 3 minutes to speak on these at a public hearing, but you have 5 minutes if you're an organization. This information somehow is now being kind of not mentioned. So for those of you who are interested in these topics and who represent or are speaking for organizations, you have 5 minutes, even if they don't tell you you do. Be advised as to that. Item 26 on the afternoon agenda is the River Street sign, for those of you who want to get into that one. And I'm going to leave that one alone. Then the Redevelopment Agency meets again at an uncertain time. The Redevelopment Agency normally is supposed to meet at 5 o'clock, but now it can meet whenever Crone wants it to meet at the end of the council session. So you really got to wait if you want to go to this Redevelopment Agency. Why would anyone want to? You'll hear in a moment. You don't know exactly when it's going to start, and so that can be. If you don't get there at the beginning, you can't use their oral communications period, which is a separate oral communications from the evening 7 p.m. session oral communications. And you may want to use that, because redevelopment has to do with all the real housing money in the city. That's where the money goes for the Dolphin Lee debacle. That's where the money goes for those kinds of projects. Item number two is about the Del Mar Theater and the $760,000 estimated and bid amounts that are being spent by Barry Swenson's company to beef up the Del Mar, if I understand this correctly, facilitate the rehabilitation and renovation. And what does the public get out of this? I think it's, 20 to 40 days a year of use. The rest of the time, it's gravy for Swenson and Au. Need I say more? I mean, this is item two on the redevelopment agenda, a redevelopment agency agenda at 5 o'clock, or whenever Crone starts the meeting after the end of the afternoon session. Then there's a thing coming up on the Maple Street parking lot redevelopment project. This is another one of those Sushi Now, Alibaba, kind of close off the area gentrification schemes, or scams, if you will, we've seen happening around town. You might want to check it out. Then the item five is in graffiti and tagging eradication. Instead of celebrating artists, of course, we're going after them. And I'm not saying all taggers or graffiti people are artists, but it's a felony to engage in graffiti these days if they can claim it costs them more than $400 to eliminate it. So that's pretty hefty stuff. Then the Peace Park is item 27 on the agenda in the afternoon. That's the one that made the headlines in the Sentinel today. Apparently we got peace parks, but no peace in the nation, and certainly no peace in the Middle East, and no peace in Washington, and no peace with the homeless here at Santa Cruz as their rights are being destroyed. And there won't be any peace without justice, as far as I can see. But instead of addressing the issues, we are reduced to squabbling over a park. It's pretty pathetic. It's item 27 on the agenda if you're interested. Then there's an accessory dwelling unit item that's coming up, item 29. I can't tell you much about it, but I'm all for decriminalizing accessory dwelling units. Not sure how significantly this does. You have to check out the ordinance yourself. You can always go to the library to check it out, or check out the city clerk's office, or go online. Go to cruzio.com, then go to City of Santa Cruz, then go to City Council Agenda, and you'll be able to find out. I think that I may have skipped ahead. I think that accessory dwelling unit may be in the evening. The evening session, it is both the Peace Park and the accessory dwelling unit items are in the evening. We're now going to have a very quick attempt to reach activist Tom Noddy, who is probably patiently waiting by the phone for the last 2 hours. I've still got some scheduling problems here, but I'm going to try to get him involved because he has been, as you know, part of the Street Performers Guidelines. Tom Noddy.
Hi.
Hey. Sorry to call you so late there, Tom. I got to stop my own babble and let you get a word or two in edgewise. How you doing?
I'm okay. Are we on the air?
You are on the air with Free Radio. We have about, you have about 10 or 15 minutes, or the two of us do. You, of course, have been working with street performing. You're more of a suite performer than a street performer these days, but you're back in town, and how are you, you've heard a few complaints, I guess, about how some street performers are being treated?
Complaints, yeah.
Yeah. So, any reports around that situation, or any thoughts?
You really caught me at a weird moment here.
I'm sorry. Would you like me to call you back? I realize I am, and also I'm trying to rush you because we don't have a lot of time left. We have about 20 minutes in the show. Would you like I know that you're kind of in and out of town though. Will you be around on Thursday? Do you think?
You know, if you give me a moment to close this file that I'm trying to do here.
Well, I suppose.
Then I could step out of this room and
breathe freely.
Accomplish this.
Well, let me explain to the audience that Tom Noddy is a man who blows bubbles for a living. I mean, talk about your weird occupations. This guy, he blows bubbles in Germany, he blows bubbles in Texas, he even blows an occasional bubble in Santa Cruz, and I met him when he was, before his bubble-blowing days, when he was a puppeteer and a homeless activist, is what I would have called him, a man who lived in his van.
Well, I was bubble-blowing at that time, too.
Well,
I have closed the file, and I'm with you.
All right. Well, so, as I said before, I've heard some nasty stories from Cosmic Chris about harassment downtown of street musicians, and I know that he's been very grateful reporting that you have offered, at least as a halfway assistance, to kind of step in to sort of, if matters could be helped with a little money in terms of resolving fines early, that you're willing to try to help out there on that particular case.
I've helped Chris deal with several times with the situations, disagreements between him and merchants downtown, and
Now, is Chris a rabble rouser and a troublemaker? Is he breaking windows and, you know, spitting on the sidewalk? Is that the problem here?
He's not breaking windows. He's not spitting on the sidewalk that I know of.
Is this raucous music designed to inflame children to acts of pornographic violence?
No. Chris is a good musician. Hey, and actually, all the cops and the hosts that I've talked to always concede that every time when the conversation begins.
Right.
They say, he's one of the better guys out here. I like his music. And then when there is a disagreement about whether he should be here now or there or later or this or that, a number of them have complained about the way he responds to it. He can be...
He doesn't tip his hat, say yes, sir, and move on, that sort of thing?
No, he's not into yes, sir, and move on.
Right. Well, the street performer...
It's not always a question of moving on, although this current one was.
I know he was hassled in the overhang near Jackson's Shoes, even though he thought he had permission to be there, and I guess there was some controversy later about that, but the store was closed. It seems, again, like one of these, you know, clear out all the riffraff so we can bring in the tourist attractions day and night, even though nobody's there at night except street musicians. And
right, and then the thing is, a while ago... many years ago, mm-hmm. The city made an effort to get these signs, or actually it was a merchants group that made this effort to get these signs that would be posted in the window of shops that wanted to have it, that would permit the use of some of the trespass laws if people came within the property line of the property. If nobody was there, it's a standing declaration. It's like no trespass sign.
Yeah.
If you put it on your property, if you're there when somebody trespasses onto your property, you can tell them to leave, and that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trespass law to cover that. If you're not there, it's sufficient to have a sign declaring that you don't want people to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Then the police can use that under a different 602,
mm-hmm.
Which is trespass laws in the state. And a number of the shops have posted signs like that, giving the police essential
information
to get people off of their property line.
Tom, Tom, do you know if there was an orchestrated campaign by the Downtown Association and the Police Department to post those signs, as was the case in San Francisco, for instance?
Yeah, it was part of a proposal by the Downtown Association many years ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm now forgetting what years that was, but in meetings where some of the downtown residents and some of the merchants complained about gatherings of people downtown in the after hours when they couldn't come out and make a complaint, they wanted to know from the police. So the police say, well, we can't move them unless you've posted a sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Downtown Association, working under the law, came up with signs that they believed would fulfill that notification requirement.
Well, there's some who claim that, in fact, Michael Schmidt has said this, that I think it's true, that the businesses in Santa Cruz actually own the property all the way out to not just to the sidewalk, perhaps even to the middle of the street, but that the city is given, a sort of right of way, and that the merchants retain responsibility for, let's say, liability claims and also cleaning the sidewalks. Do you have any clarity on that one?
I don't.
But in any case, it's generally been the custom in Santa Cruz. It varies, I guess, but we've seen a lot of, particularly in unbuilt alcoves, people playing music.
Unbuilt, you mean shops that are not open, not occupied.
Right, unoccupied shops, such as the Cooper House, where people are now being driven away from those areas. Of course, we've seen the whole downtown ordinances, which make it illegal to sit down next to any building occupied or unoccupied within 10 feet. So there is sort of this definite get rid of the riffraff, that's how I see it, perspective that is sort of ruling the city council and the downtown association. But musicians and performers, one would think, are a draw. They provide tourist dollars, they give the...